Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Doug Sandler, who is one of the owners, or is it the president or vice president of Turnkey Podcast?
I'll take any of those as long as you, as long as the paycheck's cash, I'm good.
He's one of those things. He's been around for 30 years plus years in the business experience as an entrepreneur and leader. He's written a book called Nice Guys Finish First, number one ranked on Amazon. He's also a podcast host of Nice Guys on Business. He's interviewed people like Gary Vaynerchuk. Did I get that right? How do you say that?
All right, you're close. Well, they call him Gary V because Gary V is like the entrepreneur's entrepreneur, but I think the pronunciation of his last name is Vaynerchuk, but you call him whatever you want. I guarantee you he will never call you to tell you anything.
There you go. Gary V is good enough. Arianna Huffington, which everybody knows, Dan Harris of Good Morning America, and on, and celebrities. And he specializes in teaching others the how-tos of building relationships and strengthening connections, and he's recognized speaker and writer, and I want to thank him for taking the time to do my show.
Hey, Philip, I love being here. I love producing your show. Thank you for allowing me and my team to do that as a podcaster. I got one of those messages that came up on Facebook, you know, those memories that you get every once in a while.
Yeah.
And one of the memories that came up, and this is from 2017. So as of the recording of this, that was 6 years ago. It was about 10 ways to know if you have a good job. it's like all of these things. And one of the things it talks about is, are you able to communicate effectively with the people that you work with? And so it was like the perfect, I'm like, do they know I have an interview coming up with Philip on Tuesday? Because this is the best thing. Because it kind of is a reminder of everything that we do, including podcasting, which is an obvious source of communication. Everything we do involves communication, either overt communication where we're talking to somebody or innate communication where we're having conversations with ourselves, you know, the what do you say when you talk to yourself kind of
thing. Right, exactly.
Happy to be here. I'm really excited to share with your community. And I'm really loving the fact that you are just now just going to take it away and do all of the hard work, which is asking questions. I get to do the easy work, answer the questions. You get to do the hard work.
So I work with him on his company, Turnkey, him and Strickland. And this is, I don't know what number podcast this is, but he's got a lot more than I have. But it does take practice. And with anything like consciously communicating, everything in life takes practice. And it's not, and when I say it's not easy, I say it because it's true. If everything was easy, we wouldn't be talking about this and everybody would be doing the same thing. So the first question I ask everybody is, I got a lot of questions for you and all the stuff that you've done, but I want to know, what was your turning point in your life? What was your aha moment that guided you in finding your true purpose on planet Earth, your serendipity, your coincidence? What were those things that were driving you to even get to where you're at now? Not to where you're at, but how you got there.
Do you only get one? Is there only one? Because I keep thinking there have been so many of those serendipitous moments or so many of those turning points or those catalysts for me that have led me to that next thing that I want to get to. So I don't even know where to begin to answer that question. So can I ask you a question in return?
Of course.
How do I even determine which one of those catalysts or those serendipitous moments were the things that I want to kind of anchor in so that I could say, this was the turning point for me that led to the rest of my life?
What sticks in your mind the most? What's the first thing that comes to your mind when I said that?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was, and I'm going to go back to a somber moment for a moment, back in 1996 when my dad passed away. Well, actually, it was September of 95 when my dad passed away. And just remembering him saying to me as he is in hospice care, Doug, you'll never wish you'd spent another day in the office. You know, and it's like, it took me to that point where I just said in 1995, when I had been at that point in my first marriage, 5 years married, and my first child was already here. My second kid was on the way. And I thought in my mind, man, I've been just nose to the grindstone, foot to the barrel of the pedal to the metal and working my ass off and not focused on family, but focused just on building that career. Cause that was the thing, you know, my wife wanted to come home from work and I was working. And I'm like, how else do you do this other than just work, 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 work? And, you know, when he said, you'll never wish you spent another day at the office, And it took me to that next level in my life where I said, I don't want to be this guy in this bed at this time and say, man, I have spent all of my life working and not of my life enjoying my life instead. So that was a somber moment, but it was a reality. It was a wake-up call for me to start enjoying my life a little bit more.
Well, there was a little, call them God winks. There's a little God winks. It's like, hey, and it's like, I'm a stupid head. Stop, you know, that type of thing. But we don't do that because it's not comfortable. Because sometimes we're uncomfortable to do things that we're uncomfortable in because we're used to it. And as opposed to being uncomfortable in something brand new. And I called it a new folder. So if you're uncomfortable in something brand new, there is a lot of risk involved. How do you deal with this? Maybe I'm not sleeping, or maybe I'm going to get somebody pissed off, or maybe I'm going to screw up, or maybe, but that, to me, that's the only way you grow, if for yourself. And you have to come through your thought. Are you doing your thoughts or your thinking thoughts? Which one are you using? Using those random things that everybody else tells you, like you said, work 60 hours a week and that's the only way to do it. Well, that's not necessarily true. You can work and work and work, but still get the same results that the guy's working 20 hours a week doing.
So absolutely.
So then my next question to you, what would be the difference between somebody working, like your dad said, don't say that, you know, could it be on your tombstone, right? I worked.
Right.
As opposed to 60 hours a week to 20 hours a week. What was that difference that you saw? What were you doing differently that changed something in the way you were thinking?
Sure. And I love that you say, you call it, is it God winks? Is that what you call it? God winks?
Yes, God winks.
So I always find it's not God winks. It's like God smacks. It's like, you know, coming home one day to discover that my wife had walked out on me, and that was another God smack. That was not a wink. That was a wake up call. That was a huge wake up call for me that said, man, maybe I need to start living a little bit more consciously rather than letting life happen. I'm going to make life happen on my own. I think part of it is the reality or the realization of the things that you have in your brain are those subconscious thoughts. You can't just let them go by. You need to start listening to yourself. You have to listen to your body when your body says enough. You know, you have to listen to that voice inside your head that says, you know, is this the right thing to be doing at this particular time? You have to be, maybe those are the God winks and the God smacks are the external things that happen to you as a result of those
times like that
you have going on.
I'm using that.
You are welcome to have it. So for me, I think it was understanding, putting the connection together that hard work does not equate to success. It might be smart work equates to success. So, you know, in this previous life where I was working, I wish it was 60 hours, it was probably 70 or 80 hours a week working and making a good living. But how is it that I can make the same living, or some people can make the same living working 4 or 5 or 10 hours a week? I just needed to kind of hone in on that and work on a better system rather than just hard work equates to success.
How are you physically? Because a lot of times when we burn ourselves out in our minds, our bodies start getting physically, you know, we get, you know, heart palpitation, you can't sleep, you know, sick and whatever. Were you in that situation at all?
Well, it took me till 2015. So I was, let's see, I was 50 years old, almost 51 years old before I had what many would say would be a panic attack or an anxiety attack. I literally thought that I was having a heart attack as I was descending in an elevator escalator in Washington, D.C. down to the subway. And I got down to the lower level and my hands are sweaty and I'm shaking and I'm like scared to death. And I have no idea what was going on. That was the first time that was the manifestation of all of this pent up, you know, this working too hard, stress beyond belief, you know, never doing anything for me, always doing something for the external world so that it would be viewed as success. All of that stuff that led to this 2015 at 50 years old led to that panic attack. And a lot has changed since then, you know. So in the last 8 years, becoming conscious, understanding, being a smarter me, that the reality of it is that that's when it really started to happen for me. But I'm always curious, why did it take me 50 years to figure that out?
This is my analysis of that. It's interesting because I've had other people ask the same question. I've asked it to myself because you don't have life experience. You got nothing to compare it to. And you're a punk, like even if you're in your 40s.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of reading over the past several years, philosophy, theological, and, you know, positive this, that, and all this other stuff. And I don't see a lot of things happening for people till they're like close to 50 or older, because they've made those major mistakes. There was nobody there, because if you told me to do something and you knew it was stupid,
right?
And you knew that if you told me, I wouldn't listen to you, but you said it anyway, we'd start an argument. And then maybe we won't become friends anymore. Or if we were friends, you know, real close friends. And so my point being is, you can't force somebody to change. Sometimes they just have to make those smacks upside their head themselves. And the important thing is, you have to learn from that, or you keep repeating the same mistake over and over and over and over. And then you're back, you know, you feel a little better, you feel a little worse, you just feel a little better, you feel a little worse. And that's what I think, it's bad for the mind, bad for the body, because if you're living in that roller coaster, and I'm not saying you can't be there, but in the philosophy that I have, there's a way to be able to flip it over to the subconscious and ask these certain questions, ask these certain things, have an imaging technique, do things in your mind that will keep you out of that. It's basically occupying your mind with something different than the thoughts that are keeping you from getting to where you want to be, whether it's money, whether it's marriage, whether it's friendship. Everybody's got a different definition of success. So I think it's important to sit down and analyze what you do. Before, ladies and gentlemen, before we did the podcast, we were sharing about what he did. Would you mind sharing what you do at the end of the year for the new year with the audience?
Sure. And before I tell you what my New Year's practice is for getting into the new year, understand it also, it's not about repressing the thoughts that you have and just kind of tampering them down, and just because that's what causes the stress and the anxiety. It's the dealing with it. That's the important thing. It's not just saying, no matter what happens, I'm not going to get angry, and then just having all that frustration. You know, you just put it into cigarettes and addiction, into eating and the stuffing that back down again. That's right. Not the solution. The solution is understanding why you have those thoughts to begin with. What wound is that kind of jabbing at, and working on the wound rather than working on the just pushing it all down.
Well, and before you share that information that I was asking for, you're absolutely right. I totally agree, because the more you force against it, the more it pushes back on you. And the more you try to think of something different, you know, like, well, I'm not going to think about it. Well, you're thinking about it more. So those two things, it's like going in the ocean, right? Because the ocean goes naturally, keeps flowing, unless you try to go against the waves and the waves keeps pushing you back. But if you turn around and go with the waves, then suddenly everything's nice and smooth. You're not forcing your arms, your heart rate's not going up, you're swimming real comfortably. So it just depends on which wave you want to go. You want to go with the wave or against the wave? And like you said, many times I found that telling other people about it, I used to think that if you said something, it would go away. In a lot of cases, it makes it worse, because it solidifies that in stone, and you just go, well, I could just justify it because now I told somebody about it. So I agree with you. You don't want to stuff it down, because then you would pent up and, like you said, eating, drinking, yelling, screaming, whatever it is, and everything foul. You get a stub your toe, get a flat tire.
It's that garden hose. You know, when you crimp down the end of the garden hose, yes. It's turned on. It's the bubble is just going to come out somewhere else, just going to stress the hose somewhere else. And sometimes it stresses it into an ulcer. It stresses it into an addiction. It stresses it into some other area. And you've got to let it out. But letting it out could possibly mean understanding why those thoughts are happening to begin with, working on the problem, not just working on the, okay, well, there, I just said it. I just spoke it into reality. You just yelling at somebody doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
No, and it's not just changing habits. Because if you change a habit, I found that the habit can be worse or the same, just looks a little different. So you have to change the thoughts to thinking. You have to just not have those random noisy thoughts going on. You have to change it to the thinking thoughts, where it's through the subconscious mind, through of what you really know, what I call the universal mind. And for me, I pray and meditate, and I do it 3 times a day. And it keeps me in touch with slowing that noise down, because you can't turn the noise off. People are like, well, I'm going to do something. I'm going to have a drink. I'll do something. It doesn't do anything, or watch a movie. It just comes back because you're looking at somebody else's random thoughts in the movie. It's mind entertainment. So it's just a matter of fact. I love that analogy of crimping the hose, because you're right. It just backs up. And after a while, that pressure is going to build up, and then that crink or that crinkle thing is going to go boom, and it's going to blow up, and it's not going to be good.
Totally.
Totally. Okay. So you want to talk about the New Year's thing. Yes. And again, this was not, none of this at all, the conversation has been planned at all. But what was so cool was that the timing of this episode recording is perfect because—
Not a coincidence.
That's true. There are no, what is it in improv? There's no, no mistakes, only gifts. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yes. Correct.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's no coincidences. Just take it and run. So
no coincidences, only
gifts. I love this process and procedure you do.
This was introduced to me by my girlfriend a handful of years ago, and we've been doing it every year since we've been together, and it's great. At the end of each year, we list, and she has a series of six questions, and I might be able to get you a copy of it so you can throw a link to it in your show notes if this is something that you want to do.
I love it.
What's really cool about it is it asks, and I don't remember all of the questions, but it will ask questions like, you know, some of the things that were your greatest achievements in the year, what were some of the things intentions that you're going to work on in the upcoming year. What were some of your major accomplishments? What were some of the disappointments? You know, you want to list some of the things that you have learned lessons from as well. And it really does give you a great perspective, because how often do we get to the end of the year and think, oh, what did we accomplish this year? Not much. Or maybe there was this one big thing. But if you actually start to do things like look through your calendar for wins and victories and things that you've done that have been amazing, and also those relationships that maybe you don't have any longer in your life that were maybe your disappointments. It's really amazing how much stuff has gotten done and how much space has been cleared in the previous year. So we do this, and this past year we did it with another couple, and we're sitting at a table at a restaurant doing this exercise in between courses, listing on this single sheet of paper these six questions and the answers. We're writing them down. And I would say a half a dozen or more times, the waitress came up and said, "This table over here wants to know what you're doing." Because most people go out, they have a good meal, maybe they have a drink or two, and then they go home after they celebrate the New Year's or they go to a party.
They're not putting a list down.
Right. Or maybe this is what they're doing for their, what do you call those? Those things that you do.
Resolutions
for the upcoming year. So it's not New Year's resolutions. It's more of a reflection on the previous year and maybe what you could do differently to apply the lessons that you've learned in the previous year to the upcoming year to make the upcoming year even better. And for me, that's so much of a better way than just saying something like, I want to own a house in 2023, or I want to buy a
data. Give right. Some input to it. Yes.
Yeah. It gives me the at least, you know, what's nice about it. And now we've done this for a handful of years. In addition to that, we do another exercise where we actually do some business planning and personal planning too. And that really helps too, because it takes these lessons that we've learned and the things that have happened in the past 12 months, and it starts to solidify, okay, what can we do in the next 12 months that will change where we were, you know, make it even better from where we were.
And you could also, what I like about that is because you're exploring things, you're admitting either a mistake or a success, and then thinking about that and writing it down on a piece of paper. I write everything down in pencil because I erase all the time. And thank God nobody looks at my spelling because I can't spell the even. But I look at those things, and when you write them down, it's something in your brain, right? I'm writing it down. You can see the letters spelling out and what you really want. And it's not so much the goals. We were talking about that also. It's not so much goals. You have a goal, fine. You want to do X. But I found there's an old business saying, maybe it's philosophy. Don't enjoy the process, enjoy the end goal. And what I've discovered in my life, because I got my engineering degree as an adult, married, and my master's as an adult, married with kids. And I realized it's not getting that piece of paper, because you get the piece of paper, and you just sit there and go, that's it? What was I doing? This didn't. And I was miserable the whole time because I'm thinking about, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And it turned into a drudgery. I didn't want to do it. So you flip that on its head and you write down those things. I really like that. One of the questions I do have is, what was the business that started you down the path where you're at now?
Well, can I go back to when I was 13?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
It was part of the philosophy, not just the business. It was part of the philosophy because I have found that it really doesn't matter what business that you're in, as long as you process the business enthusiastically and with a positive vibration. Well, which means to me, no matter what you do, you got to do it with enthusiasm.
Yes.
You know, at 13, when I had my first job working in at a place called Jeffrey's Ski Hut, taking the boxes down from the top floor down into a basement, the hut part of the ski hut, taking the skis that used to come in the front door from the trucking company and take them downstairs and process them, take them out of the boxes, you know, get the plastic wrap off of them. I used to create songs, and I'm sure my coworkers hated me, not because I'm a bad singer, but because it's like, this guy literally taking hundreds of pairs of skis and binders and boots down from the truck, and he's happy about it. This is the worst job you could ever have. And I kept thinking, this is the best job ever. I'm 13 years old, and I'm going to be able to buy a pair of these skis at some point, because I'm the only kid that's working at 13.
Right.
And I loved it. It was, you know, my son and I, we went to the national parks a handful of years ago, and he was probably in his early 20s. I think maybe he was 21 because he's 26. Yeah, probably about 20, 21 years old. And we had the goal of making it to Glacier National Park. And Glacier is in Montana, and it's got this nice mountaintop, and it's got, you know, all these things that are there that you can see. And when you get to the top of Glacier National Park and you look down from the top of the mountain and you look at the world, you know, from your perspective at that time, I'm like, that's great, but that is only one view. Where we really enjoyed it was we enjoyed right after we left Salt Lake City Airport, and we left the airport and started driving towards Glacier, which was an 11-hour drive. We stopped at a barbecue stand, and then we stopped at a crystal shop, and then we stopped at an Indian reservation. And then we got pulled over by a police officer that on the Indian reservation that, you know, saw that I was speeding, and all of the things that, and we discovered in this trip. And I know everybody has heard this many times, and you just alluded to it a moment ago. It's not the destination, it's the journey. And we had such a great time on the journey. The destination was standing on the top of a mountain and overlooking the world from our perspective. And that was wonderful, but that was just a snapshot of that entire trip. So we lived that trip after that beginning part of saying over and over again, man, it's all about the journey. It's not about the destination. And what a great lesson for, at the time, a 50-year-old, 51-year-old, be able to learn, and a 20-year-old be able to teach me that lesson at that time. I'm like, man, that was really cool. And my son didn't even realize that that was a lesson that he imparted upon me. I'd heard that expression a million times, as we all have heard. It's not the journey. It's not the destination. It's the journey. But I really lived it and understood it at that point. And that was great. So going back to your original thing, was it that, you know, what was it that really kind of shaped everything? I mean, it probably was that first job, because my attitude has not changed since that age of 13, which is do everything with enthusiasm, enjoy what you're doing. And it almost doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you do it with enthusiasm, and not false enthusiasm, genuine enthusiasm, really enjoy doing what you do. And I hope that's something you've recognized, that not only I do, but my team does, because we try to teach that to, it's hard to teach people that, but as long as you share those lessons, maybe they'll come along for the ride. Those that don't will fall aside, and those that do will stay on the with the company. But I hope that that is something that, as a client of ours, you feel that you're not just a number or a transaction or a dollar amount coming in the door. It's almost like the dollars will always come if you do what you're doing enthusiastically and with the joy, the joie de vivre, the joy of life all the time.
Yeah. And it's funny when you mentioned that. When I first started, I talked to you three times before I finally signed.
Yeah, I think so.
And if not more. And he had these little meetings with some other guests and people, and then we did one-on-ones, and it just wasn't the right time. And I tried a few other things, and I did try them really well. But again, what you don't know, you don't know. And you have to figure it out along the way. And that's the scary part of that why people get stuck in the thoughts of their feeling comfortable. I feel comfortable being uncomfortable because it's familiar.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because we've all done it, all of us. But when you start learning and teaching yourself, it's uncomfortable to be uncomfortable in something new. I'm not saying being stupid, taking a chance, but I'm saying, you know, what I'm doing with you guys. And I didn't know how to do a podcast. I didn't know what to do. And do I have some technical background and music and blah, blah, blah? Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. I didn't know what I was doing. So, you know, there's a few things I had to learn, and the story is not important about what I learned, because the next person that signs with you is going to learn something completely different because they'll know something else.
Right.
But I've always done it with love and enjoyment and wanting to learn, not just listen to you talk, but learn what you're telling me. Even if it's one tiny little tidbit that you said, I'm like, I never thought about that, looking on the mountain and saying there's more to this, just a slice of this. If that made a difference for me, and you probably will never know it unless I vocalize it, because mm-hmm. most times you don't know what somebody, you can just change the life. So for me, working with you and your company, you treat me the way I want to be treated, the way I would want to treat somebody else. And that is, and I'm not doing that. He's not paying me for anything. If anything, I'm paying him. But it's about working as a team. Because in the corporate world, I would show up in the medical field, and there was some major stuff that I had to work with. And I came in not like there's an old saying, like a bull in a china shop going, you're a moron, you did this wrong. I went, let's go have a cup of coffee. You tell me what you need.
Right, right.
And one of the things Doug told me was, can you, I might be saying this wrong, can you be taught? Are you willing to be?
Are you coachable?
Are you coachable? That's the word. I couldn't think of
it. Yeah.
And I said, does that mean that you're going to tell me what to do? And if I do it, I'll be successful. And you said, yes. I go, not a problem. Those who claim to be the wise men are sure the fool. I don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. And I like that idea, because with going back to the first experience, I was 15 when I had a paper route, and I just remember my mom dropping me off there, walking in the building. I don't remember what the check looked like. I just remember looking at it going, this is my money. Now, I don't remember how I had to give some money to my mom, if I had a savings account, whatever, but I'm like, this is mine. And you realized when you work, you get paid for it. It's kind of cool. So I have several questions. And one of them is, what is your conscious communication? How do you empower others? Other than what we just talked about, how you've made a difference in my life. And before you answer that, I'm going to add something else. Anytime you empower somebody and it empowers you, you have to do it yourself. And when we started this, I had some ideas, and they helped me throw the name conscious communication and different ideas, but I have to do it myself. You could teach me all the way till the end of time, but if I don't follow it and I fight against it, like we were talking about earlier, fighting against the waves, nothing goes anywhere. So that's one of the things I have enjoyed with not feeling uncomfortable, because I have no problem asking questions. And I've asked questions because I'm like, I get on this one piece of software I work on with them, and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I know I can get the answer in 2 seconds when I go, Doug or Strickland or whoever. You answer it, and sometimes you do it for me. I'm like, great, show me what you did. And then next time I know. So you've really made me feel very comfortable in being uncomfortable and not knowing. So what is your communication? What you consciously communicate? How do you empower others to be successful?
I think one of the ways that people grasp onto the idea of being able to do something even in an uncomfortable environment is giving them a safe room to fail. You know, so giving somebody an opportunity to fail and not on the other side of failure, not saying, man, that was, or yelling or being abusive or any of those things with them. I think I go back to a time I spent 30 years. We haven't talked about any of my history, which is totally fine because, you know, it's in the history, it's in the past. I spent 30 years as a bar mitzvah MC. And, you know, in those 30 years,
I have to do this. Okay, I'm done. Go ahead.
So after doing over 2,000 bar mitzvahs in my career, I was represented early on in my career by an agency in Washington, D.C. called Washington Talent. And one of the things that I noticed was, and the guy that runs the company, he's a good buddy of mine. We have different management styles. He tends to rule by intimidation, which can work. You know, people have built huge successful businesses that way, probably more than the way that I do it. But I tend to run or lead by being the guy on the front line doing the things that those other people are doing and catching them in the act of doing something right as opposed to doing something wrong. So when I say that, I think that when you go into an office environment and you look for something negative, guess what you're going to find? You're going to find something negative. But if you go into an office environment and you try to find the act, you know, catch them in the act of doing something right as opposed to doing something wrong, and you see them and you kind of, and you build them up by saying, hey, that was really, and not disingenuine, but a genuine, I think that was great. You did that great. Can you tell me more about how you did that? Because I'd love to be able to teach other people how to do that same thing that you just did. Whatever it was, whether it's a management thing, a process, a system, whatever it is. And so when you catch somebody in the act of doing something right and give them positive affirmations about doing that thing right, they're going to look to you the next time they do something right as a, hey, didn't I do that right? You know, hey, didn't I do that right? Hey, didn't I do that right? And you get to be known around the office as the guy that's catching people in the act of doing something right. You get to be the very positive, uplifted leader as opposed to the not the feared leader, but the revered leader. And I liked it because nobody was ever afraid of me. And, you know, when you empower people by giving them the opportunity to fail fast and be okay with it and be fail safely and still catch them in the act of doing something right when they do something right, instead of focusing on the negative thing that was done, that they did, you're going to find that you have a team that wants to be with you and is enthusiastic, and you're creating an environment that you want to be. It's a healthy, positive environment, not a fearful, I don't know if I do this wrong, am I going to still have my job? There are plenty of environments that run that way.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the environment I wanted to be a part of. So when I would go into the office and catch people in the act of doing something right, that was for me like the breeding ground of the nice guys finish first philosophy. You know, catching people in the act of doing something right, telling the truth, returning your phone calls, being a nice guy, all of that stuff. No matter what environment that you take it into, if you take it into an environment, whether you're in the entertainment business or in the podcasting business or in the engineering world, when you take the nice guy finish first philosophy with you, doesn't matter what you do, you're still going to be successful and enthusiastic and positive about it, because that's, it's not what you're doing, it's the process by which you're doing it, which is more important to me.
Well, I've gotten more out of people. Most of my life has been in the corporate world. And, you know, you have bad managers, you have good managers. I remember taking a job one time because I liked the guy and he was gone 3 months later and I was miserable. So trying to live through somebody else, I learned quickly, is a bad idea. Going to a job because that manager's there or that so-and-so, unless it's the owner, but that could change too, is not necessarily a really good idea. You have to have something underlying. My last job, it was in a factory environment, and I traveled all over the world. I was there for about 26 years, a little over 26 years before I left, and because the company got bought out. But before I got there, the guy that wanted me to have the job called me 4 times, and I was working somewhere else. And he goes, would you just come over? I go, but I like where I'm at. In fact, I love where I'm at. I was actually working at the University of Chicago, working on medical equipment. I was the supervisor, but I was a working supervisor, and I was having a blast. I was talking to everybody. I'm fixing things and learning things. But then he said, would you just come out and see? I really like you. I met you years ago, blah, blah. 3 weeks later, I took the job.
Wow. I didn't know where that story was going. I was going to say, now you decided to stay because you really like the people and all.
No, they gave me an opportunity to create a technical support department of one, which was me. And I was that for about the first 10 years. And it gave me an opportunity to take my learning experiences in the field and general experiences and create something completely out of nothing. And did I make mistakes? Oh, I can't even tell you how many things. I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
You know, but you learn from it. But you do it with a smile in your voice. You do it with a smile on your face. You do it with a good attitude. And you apologize. People learn very quickly if something went wrong. We had, this was some specific thing, I don't remember, but something went wrong. I had to come into the office and they said, well, Boogaloo, if he did it wrong, he would have admitted it already. Just leave. Phil, just get out of here. Because I would always admit it. And I was the guy who everybody, and I wasn't doing it because I was like, easy to say, I screwed up. I didn't like it if I did, but everybody knew, because if I say, you know what, I really messed up, that opened up people to laugh and we joked about it and I didn't do it again. And probably sometimes I did it again. But you learn and you give people the opportunity to grow within themselves and not grow within that conscious mind folder of the same thing. I'm always going to be rejected. They're always going to hate me. He's going to fire me. Something's going to go wrong. I'm going to lose my job. We're so scared about so many things in life. It's probably 90% of them never, ever happen. But we're worried about what the unpredictable future is. We worry about the past, which you can do absolutely nothing about.
Nothing about it.
Nothing. And one of my favorite ones is, if you do something to me and I react to you, you're now in charge of me.
That's true.
That's
true.
I look around. That's true. Why did he do? What is it? And it doesn't matter if it's a relationship. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, like all, you know, I'm like, and you're getting all frustrated. You can't sleep. We've all done it. And you realize after a while, when somebody did something, they're home playing with their kids, going on vacation, and you're at home going, I'm going to lose my job. And you find out, hopefully you find out pretty quickly, that you're wasting your time.
Totally.
Don't do it. My next question. How have you learned to trust your gut?
Well, I mean, if you can't listen to that voice inside your head and go from there, you're just going to end up spinning and spinning.
Which voice are you listening to? Are you listening to the noisy one or the one you know is the truth? How do you separate those two for you?
Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes the noisy one disguises itself really well to feel like it's the truthful one. You know, it's kind of like the anxiety bug that's out there. You know, when that anxiety bug hits you, it makes you feel like that false sense of security because you're not in an anxious moment is your next anxious moment about to happen. So it's like you start to live in fear of anxiety when you have anxiety in your life. You have to learn to listen to that voice inside your head, the voice of reason, the thing that's in there that understands where you're going, that understands who you are to the core, and not to listen to that endless chatter. There is endless chatter, not only in your own head, but in the world itself. Everybody has an opinion of how they think that you should be doing things. You know, the issue is you're going to get should all over. You know, you can't live your life in the way that other people expect you to live. You have to live your life that's true to you and to no one else other than you. I don't know that there's a stock answer to how can you separate that calm, centered, conscious voice from the noise? Because like I said, it does a really good job of disguising it. It's the recognition that you have both of those that sometimes is the best thing to start with. You know, when you're sitting down to meditate or to have your thoughts, if you're not a meditator, to have your own thoughts, or when you're just driving and you hear that chatter going off and then you hear that other voice that says, it's okay, you've got to understand that both of those are thoughts. You just have to figure out which one is the one that you're actually going to be listening to. It's hard to say, it's hard to cancel out that noisy voice because, man, that noisy voice, it's so loud and compelling that you almost want to hear it every time. But the noise is always going to be there. You're never going to stop that noise.
No.
You just have to understand that other side of it too, which is the counter side, the shadow side of the noise, which is quiet. How do you?
And it goes back to what we said earlier, they're not going against the waves. The more you keep forcing against it, the worse it gets. Now, for me, I have the subconscious mind and is the non-noisy mind, and the conscious mind is, and the imaging technique that I have, and I ask questions too during it, but I have a whole imaging world that I have inside me that I can picture right now while we're talking. And it takes work and it takes effort. And how much are you creating on your own just, you know, we're magnets. So how much are you creating a bad relationship? How much are you creating bad business? How much are you creating whatever it is, you know? And when you start off the day, that's why for me, everybody's got it differently. Now I do a prayer and meditation in the morning. I do it for a few minutes in the afternoon. Then in the evening, it sometimes goes on for 45 minutes. I end up falling asleep on my couch in my family.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm getting something out of it. Everybody's something different and there's no right or wrong way. Well, one of the things that was important to me is when the world starts coming at you, you don't have time to go into, excuse me, you know, before you fire me, I need to get into my conscious and subconscious mind.
Sometimes it's going to happen at the same time.
Exactly. And for me, and I'm not saying what I have is perfect all the time, but for Ajahnoy and the philosophy itself, it really has worked for me. It's controlled it's the switch going between the two minds. It's like a hard switch that you can fulcrum, you can just like a teeter-totter balance between the two. And I can image this in my head, and I could see the feeling better, feeling worse, feeling better, feeling worse, and choose which mind to go to. Now, it takes work. It takes practice. But as my dad used to say, anything worthwhile is worthwhile doing. It takes a lot of work. And I think that's the, we're not taught this. No schools teach it. There's psychology classes and stuff like that. But no school ever talks about the mind, because there's a difference between the brain and the mind. The brain is just a functioning part with left and right hemisphere, blood vessels, and hard bone around it to protect it. And the mind is the actual thoughts or the thinking thoughts. And these are the things that we have to work on all the time. But nobody does anything. They're looking for a quick answer. And there is no quick answer. There's something that you have to work on all the time. So I think you're right. You have to figure out, is it a feeling that you get that's associated? Is it an emotion that you get?
Good points.
Is it something that you need to learn? And again, it doesn't work all the time. In my philosophy, I wanted to create something you can do right on the spot. And it's not easy, I understand, but it can be done with practice. But sometimes maybe you need to figure out, you know what? I had a friend of mine that went out at the factory and would take a 30-minute nap after lunch every day in his car. Because when he didn't, he wasn't like meditating, mm-hmm. but in a sense it was like a brand new day for him. And he's, to this day, I still know him. So I've known him for over 30 years. He still does it.
Wow.
He still does it. But, and nobody knew about it. And he would park real far out. Nobody knew he was there. And I knew, but I never looked and wanted to bother him. And it refreshes him. So if it's something you need to do, or if you need to come home after a long day and have a bologna and rye and mustard sandwich, and that makes you feel at ease in the present moment, and it can slow down the noise, go. For me, it's chocolate. But I
know that. We happened to be talking several times as I was on my way to Trader Joe's, and you have a specific type of chocolate that you like too.
85% dark chocolate. Thank you.
I know it. I know it.
With almonds. But anyway,
love it.
But it's important to slow down and figure out, because I have my first two students for the philosophy, and one of them said, well, I'm not doing it the way you're doing it. I said, I'm not expecting you to. Just right. like when right. you do it
right.
for me.
Right.
One of the things Doug told me at the beginning, what worked for him is not going to work for me. At least that's the way I interpreted it.
And it's correct right. interpretation.
Yeah, it is, because you're just giving me the tools. If I follow A, B, C, and D and keep going, I'll get to Z, and I will be whatever my success is for me, because your success is different than mine. So whatever it is, but you got to feel comfortable. And I've been really enjoying the ride. I've been loving the ride because I'm working with a group of people that if I'm paying for somebody to do something for me, and I'm only expecting them to do it as a business, but not as a working relationship, to me, it's going to fail. That's why I believe it's successful, because it's building. It's still new. It's very new, but it's learning and growing and find out where the fit is. You don't know what you don't know until you get there. So I have, leading up to this, how do you start your day and end your day to keep that positivity moving forward like flowing water? What do you do at the beginning of your day or at the end of the day? Is there any little processes or procedure you do? You know, do you have a piece of chocolate at noon to make you feel better? What is something when things like it all comes crashing down and you're not expecting it, especially those are the times that you really need that?
Yeah, the high stress points. Fortunately, those are few and far between now because we've built an amazing team and process to help eliminate the cinching of the hose so that it bubbles out on one side and it starts to really stress. So we've created a great system, not only with Turnkey, but just a good system that's a great model for any business to run on. So my process is pretty simple, and it's not really a process. It's just the things that I do in the morning. I wake up. I generally wake up, you know, 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning. I love to do the coffee thing. But for me, the coffee thing is not the process of just drinking the coffee. It's the making of the coffee too. So, you know, we're in a instant society. So everybody wants to put in their K-cup and put the lid down and hit the brew button and it comes out. I don't like to do that. I like to get my water, filter my water, put it into the tea kettle, boil the tea kettle, put the coffee in, two scoops of it into the French press, put the water into the French press. After that's done, you know, run it through and do a bulletproof coffee. So I'm having a little MCT oil, coconut oil, butter, some cinnamon, vanilla, putting it in a cup.
I don't like coffee. I want some.
Right. It's a whole process. I mean, my coffee process probably takes me 20 to 30 minutes just in the making of it in the morning. Wow. Because I don't want to rush that. I don't want to just get to my day. And so I'm a guy, I do like social media, but I don't want to be addicted to social media. But I do, very similar to my coffee, I have my social media process. I want to see what my Facebook friends have been up to. And I have a pretty large Instagram account with one of the podcasts that I run, my Mustang podcast. So, you know, I like to see what the bunches of people that are in my community there are doing. And I like to check on my bank account to see what happened with that over the course of the evening. And I like to see what my mom has been doing. So I check in on her Facebook, and my mom's 90 years old and she's still on, you know, doing that stuff.
Good for her.
And so I usually, even if I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, I usually don't get started really a part of my work day until maybe 10 or 11 o'clock.
Wow.
Because I like to ease into my day. And I really like to be done a couple of hours later.
Well, that's your way of doing things that works. That's your ingenuity. That's your way, your process of procedure. And again, everybody's going to do something different. I like that because you're thinking about making the coffee, you're smelling the coffee, you're putting stuff in, you're doing the press thing and all this other stuff. You're not just doing it for the sake of doing it.
One of the things I forgot to even mention, which is part of the process that I go through probably every day, at least 5 days a week, is that my girlfriend and I, we either go hiking or we go to the gym. So Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we'll go hiking, some days longer than others, but it's usually an hour a day. We'll go hiking. I live right at the foothills of the Ojai Valley, which is a beautiful area in California. And we have a house that is 5 minutes from, you know, we can be at 2,500 feet of elevation from 900 feet of elevation in just 2 minutes. And so I love to do the hike. And then we go to the gym a couple of days a week to get some other than just cardio in there. So I try to do some self-care. And those were things that were non-negotiables for her, not non-negotiables in terms of she wouldn't have a relationship with me, but they were non-negotiables for her in her life. And I'm like, well, these seem like they are pretty reasonable things. Let me try to put these in my life as well. So after coffee, we'll do the exercise or the hiking thing. I'll do some work. And like I said, I don't want to work like I did in the 90s and have, you know, that vision of my dad saying, you know, you'll never get to your deathbed wishing you spent another day at the office. So, you know, the 3 or 4 hour work day is not unrealistic to me. But, you know, at 58 years old now, I think I've earned the right to be able to say I can do that now, as opposed to somebody that's 20 and trying to figure out where their life is going. I know where my life is going, and I know it's not just about how big a bank account balance you can have. I think it really is about enjoying the journey, not just the destination of retirement.
No, I always thought, because my dad used to always say, I'm going to retire, I'm not going to do anything. And that was fine. And my parents were together for 70 years. They were married for 65, and then they passed on. My mom had, it doesn't matter, but things, my dad died from loneliness. My dad could not live without my mom. And that was a great relationship. Few people actually said it was like a love story. But the idea is, I've been there. I've worked all night long, and I loved it. And I used to travel. My first trip overseas was to Holland. And I told my boss at the time, he goes, his name is Dave. I said, Holland, Michigan? He said, no, you're more on Holland. And I went all by myself. I was
tulips. You know, like tulips.
Those places.
At Holland.
I was there for 2 weeks. And then I kept going on different trips. My first long trip was like 14 hours. And I was so excited about sitting on a plane to watch a movie and do it and sit and, you know, I was just so excited. I wasn't excited to go where I was going. I was excited for the trip. Like, I think back a little, why crazy? Well, because I never did it. And I always dreamed about doing it. So I was blessed with a lot of my work life. In fact, pretty much my whole work life. There was some hiccups, of course, like anybody, but always had met great people, learned great things. I mean, I mentioned I worked at University of Chicago for several years. I met so many people, asked so many questions, and had such a great experience. I've got nothing to complain about, but I learned then. And then after a while, suddenly I'm like, you know, I don't want to do 24/7 on call anymore.
Totally.
I want to
I that's it. I'm done. And he's like, well, what happens if we give you that? No, you can't give me enough for it. I've been there and done that. I'm lucky I stay up till midnight during New Year's. So
I'm with you on that. 9:30. I'm done. I'm in bed. If I make it to 10, if I make it to double digits, I feel like I've succeeded.
See, I see the ball dropping. No, I've seen this before. No, I have a drink. No, I had a drink earlier. I'm sleepy. I want to go to bed. Yeah, but it's not so much, people say, well, you're getting old. I said, no, it's just life experience. I don't want to do it anymore. I've been there. I've done that. I want to move on in something that it means something different. Because, it's like when you're 18 is different when you're 21. When you're 21, yeah. It's different than when you're 25.
Yep.
And when you're 30, those just few years, it's like a total different perspective because you're getting life experience. And I think it's good to fall. I think it's good. Not always good. I mean, things you've gone through and things that I've gone through in my life, I sometimes like, oh, why did I have to go through that? But as my wife now, because I'm divorced also, I've been married for a long time now. And
I saw you counting and you just gave up.
I wasn't counting. No,
I was counting. I saw Philip's fingers were moving feverishly.
Yeah, yes. 16, 17 years, but I've been divorced for about 23. So, but my wife reminds me, it's like, if you didn't get married, you didn't have kids, we wouldn't be together. And she's right. So we go back to turning all the way back to the original question. What was the serendipitous moment with the coincidence and stuff? And you're absolutely right. I totally agree. It's not one moment. It is never one moment. It's just an unbelievable amount of moments that some I can access clearly. Some are there in the memory, but I don't have access to them. Unfortunately, I'm not Data on Star Trek. But it's all those serendipities. It's all those things. And I don't like shooting on myself. So I don't. You do go back there sometimes, but you learn that you shoot on yourself all the time. That's all you're going to do is keep shooting on yourself
totally.
To the day you die. And you're like your dad said, you're going to be just sitting there going, I should have worked an extra hour at work. And I think it's making it different. No, rephrase. It is about making a difference with people, empowering others, which empowers yourself, passing on something to people while you're here on planet Earth, whatever that is, in a small way. Because it's all about, I believe everybody's got a purpose and you need to find that. And I found that through my philosophy. You find it through your philosophy. And if those philosophies can merge together or people can share that, I think it makes people better for themselves and better for you because you learn from everybody else.
Well, look what's so cool about what you do. I mean, think about what you do for a second. You could just go la, la, la through life and just keep it all to yourself and use that philosophy for your own benefit. Not even focused on teaching the world your philosophy, and you would still benefit greatly by that. You're so passionate about the philosophy that you have created, you want to teach other people how to do it. And that means that you've got to have this huge level of belief in what you do. And I know you do, because I know you just at least in the last year that we've known each other. And so for me, I look at what you do and say, I admire you because it's not just, hey, I want to do this because I think it'll benefit me. It's I want to do this because I want to help other people benefit from what I have created here too. And I believe it so in it so much that I don't think it's just me that can do it. I think that everybody can do it. We've just got to be able to focus on some of these processes and things in order to get out of our own way. Because most of the time, the problems that we have created or that are created in our lives are created because we have created them.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with the external influences on your life creating them. You're creating these own problems yourself because of the negative stories that you keep telling yourself over and over again.
Yes.
And so Philip's job, if he chooses to accept it, is right. To help you to go beyond that. And I admire that greatly about what you do and love that you do that because you're the perfect person to do that.
Well, thank you. It's something that I am very passionate about. And I mean, I have my whole first two students now. One of them said, the way you're doing this philosophy and this training and the teaching, my wife deemed me, she wants me to say I'm mentor of the mind. I kind of like that.
I like that too.
Yeah. And that comes from an actuary too. So she's a nerd and she's smart. So that's why I married her. But anyway, he said, you're basically talking yourself out of a job. I said, what are you talking about? I said, well, once this goes on, it's not like you really need to come back to you all the time. So maybe you come back to you just to do a refresher, but it's nothing. It's your inner knowing knows. It's you. And that's sort of, almost exactly, now that I think about it right now,
is why this works with you and your company. Because you're talking yourself out of a job. Because you're empowering somebody to do something and seeing your success and following that those processes or procedures that will be my success. And I see that the same way.
Well, but I take it to the next level, though. I want people to understand how to do what I do, because at some point they're going to realize, well, I don't want to produce my own podcast or edit or distribute or do any of that stuff. I want to continue to, if I can teach people how to be successful doing in this environment, then they'll never leave me, because they're making more than they are spending. And the only way that they're making more is by learning what I'm teaching them to do. And even if it meant talking myself out of a job, that's fine. What's the next thing then? But if you've trusted me enough to be able to help you get out of doing your day gig, because your side gig is making more money than your day gig, you're going to look to me for, okay, what's the next step for me? And I'll have the next step. When we started our production business, we were just producers and editors and distributors of content. And then we realized, hey, it's not just producing, editing, and distributing content. It's what's the next step? You know, what's the next level when it comes to podcasting? And that was the day that I thought of the course Next Level Podcasting. How do I actually take what I'm doing and build a business out of it? And that's what you're a part of right now. It's like, how do I take this podcasting thing that will help me get my message out to the world? And how do I actually make money at it? And how do I create a business out of it? And that's where kind of we've been doing some of the coaching and the work on it as well. It's not just about creating content, putting it out to the world. It's how do you not only do that, it's yes, and how do I do that and benefit from that from a business?
Well, it's also the idea of, it's like, I don't need to worry about if I have a million people listening. It's about using this as a business and getting your message out and understanding how to do it and just learning how to maneuver things and in your life and in your business to be able to work it through. Because I'm not giving up this. I've got several things that Doug already knows attached to this. And I'm not going down that road right now, but it's all there. And I've got a lot of material, but this is the one I'm focusing on. I think one of the other things that people tend to do is they do the 10 different things and not focusing on the one thing.
Yeah. That's really hard.
It is, because I thought, okay, as you do these things at the same time, you do this and da 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 da. I'm like, no.
And one of them will work. It's challenging. And one of them will work. I'll do these 10 things. It's hard to do 10 things well all at the same time. Why don't you just focus on doing one thing well, really well, and then creating a system around that. And when you can do that and do it successfully, you'll never want to stop, whether it's podcasting.
It takes a little longer, but it might take a little longer.
Yeah, it could take a little bit longer. But I think also people, I have a friend that I won't mention his name because I don't want to throw him under the bus, but he is the guy that's out there that's doing those 10 things. And when he tries to do 10 things, none of them end up being successful. And I feel like if you would just stop doing maybe 7 of those 10 things and focused on 3 of those, you could put more time, effort, energy, and effort into it. And you probably will be successful at one of those. They're all good ideas. You know, I used to go fly fishing with my dad when he was living. And one of the things that I remember going to one of those early on ponds with him when I was early on in fly fishing, and he would open up the back of his trunk or his hatchback, and he would pull out the fly rod. And in that fly rod, or next to the fly rod, was a fly vest. And in one of the pockets of the vest had this box, and he'd open up the box and there would literally be 1,000 flies in there. I don't know if you've ever seen what a fly box looks like.
Oh yeah, but I have seen what a fly
it's
box.
All of these different sizes hooks and all of these different color feathers and furs and all of this stuff on the hooks. And I would look in that with like overwhelm and think, how the hell is he going to know which of those flies is going to work for this pond at this particular time? And I said, Dad, how do you know which of these flies works? And he said to me, and again, I'll never forget how he presented it, but he goes in and he picks up one, and it was happened to be a number 12 elk hair caddis. That's the one that it was. He picks it up and he goes, it's this one. I said, how do you know it's this one? He says, because this is the one I think is going to work the best. And as it relates to business, if you have 10 things that you are doing and you can't focus your effort, time, and energy on any of those 10 specifically because you got so many things working, if you just focus on the 3, how do you know the 4th one wasn't going to work? Well, it could have worked. But you're going to have a better chance if you just focus on the 3 of them, or even better, focus on one of those 3 until it either fails and you give up, you've thrown that cast enough times where you say, well, that's not the one, But if you stick with the one and you really focus on it, like my buddy who has these 10 things going, nothing is working because he stops 3 feet from gold. He's like, he gives up because he's like so exhausted by the time he's done with his week that he doesn't know how to focus on just one. So with my dad and the fly box, it's like, I think any of those 1,000 flies could have worked. But the one that continued to work was the one that he went to over and over again because, hey, it worked once, it'll work again. And if it worked twice, it'll work five times. If it worked five times, we know it could work, you know, 100 times. What's changed? Nothing has changed.
Oh, so again, that's another serendipity, another coincidence, another teaching moment that stuck in your mind that you remember the name of the fly.
I do. I do. And it is my favorite fly to date.
And that's amazing because it's something that was supposed to be, see, I believe those is not coincidences. I think those are God winks, or you say sometimes they're God smacks. But if you don't realize them, you keep repeating the same thing over and over again if you don't learn from them. And we all do that.
And you, can you see that?
Oh my God, that's small.
That is a number 12 elk hair caddis. And that is in a little jar that I keep in my drawer to remind me, and there's two of them in there,
okay,
to remind me that it doesn't matter what we focus on. If we focus on one thing, hey, it's my elk hair caddis. Podcasting is my number 12 elk hair caddis right now. And until I decide that it's going to become my number 18 royal coachman or whatever it is, it's going to be at the next step, I'm going to focus all of my energy and effort on my elk hair caddis because I want to be able to fish this podcasting pond for as long as the podcasting pond is giving fish. And my 12 elk hair caddis is working really good right now. So I'm just going to keep doing it.
And well, I think that's the right idea. And you know how many things I have attached to Ajinoy, but they're all the same, but they're a little different. And they're great, but I tried a couple things. It didn't work. And then when you finally came up the 12,000th time, I'm like, fine. All right. My God,
gave up.
Fine.
He gave up.
And then finally
gave up.
I think I took like 2 or 3 weeks just to respond because I'm looking at that phone, my wife. I'm like, did I really sign with these guys? Because I didn't get screwed or anything, but I wasn't.
Yeah, you had
a real good experience with some of that.
Right.
You
got a rash.
I got a rash. Yeah. And it was still itching. And,
you know,
I just didn't want it spreading all over my body. So, but it worked out really well. It was very, if you're familiar with Blazing Saddles, this is my shooting hand. That's how I signed the contract because I'm thinking, ooh, I'm doing this. Ooh, they're promising that. And you have to have, it's very, I don't say it's difficult, but you have to earn trust.
I agree with you. And somebody in your audience one day, whether it's the moment that this episode airs or in a year from now, when that person has heard you for the 52nd time listening to 52 episodes, somebody from your audience is going to reach out to you and say, hey, you know, you talked to that Sandler guy about a year ago, and I'm just re-listening to the episode. And he said, maybe you should talk to Phil about something. And my feeling is that, you know, we have this guy in our audience, and I think, you know, you may have talked to him at one point, Lou Diamond, or maybe you've heard me talk about Lou.
Yes, I've heard you.
You know, I got in the business of podcasting in 2014, going into 2015, when I started the show, Nice Guys on Business, because I wanted a way to promote my book, Nice Guys Finish First. And after 2 years of really working the audience hard with, don't you want, you know, a copy of my book, and don't you want my management training and understand my philosophy, one guy, Lou Diamond from my audience, reached out and said, hey, I know you guys are talking about Nice Guys all the time and you have this management philosophy, and that's great, but I don't want to learn how to do that. I want to learn how to start a podcast. Can you show me how? And it had nothing to do with my business, but I'm like, he seemed like a nice guy. We had a conversation on the phone. I had no package, no pricing, no anything, no process. I just said, I don't even know how I would charge you for this, Lou. And we came up with a price together, and we did it for a period of 6 months. And Lou now has almost as many episodes, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes under his belt, millions of dollars in revenue that has been generated. I probably even much more successful than I would have ever thought anyone that I would have taught about something that I had no clue about. He was the first of 300 clients. And so I think about your show and the process and your enthusiasm and your philosophy, the uniqueness of your philosophy, and think, there is somebody in your audience right now that says, I don't know what this Ajinomoto thing is all about, but I like this guy, Philip, and I want to talk to him about something. I don't know what. And if you're that guy or that girl in the audience, just have a conversation with Philip. Just say, hey, I have no idea what I want from you. I just know that I like the energy that you present. And let's figure out a way that you and I can work on something together. That's the kind of thing, that's that word. And I sent you that episode of our Turnkey podcast.
Right.
That's that word opportunity. When you look for opportunity, you absolutely find it. When you don't look for it and you're only focused on the one thing that you know how to do well, the opportunity, it very rarely finds you. I'm not saying spread yourself thin like my buddy. I'm saying keep your philosophy, but work within the framework of your philosophy to find an opportunity that's out there to profit and benefit from. And because you're so enthusiastic and so wise about it, it's only a matter of time. That's why I know it will be successful for you, as it has been for, you know, hundreds of people that have followed our system, because it's going to work. I know you believe in what you do. And as long as you believe in what you do, you're a nice guy, you tell the truth, and you return your phone calls or your emails, you're going to be successful at it. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, it's just a matter of fact of when I got divorced and I married my wife now, and I was a kind of a beat up puppy dog. And the reason why I'm saying that is she saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And that's the same with working with you, because if you didn't see it, you didn't feel it, there was no excitement. He's seen the growth in the past since I've been just starting this brand new.
Oh my God. In 60 days, I'm like, oh my God, you have come so far from where you were. And I know it's hard to see it when you're in it and you can't see the forest for the trees.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, look, I can see it. And I know even in the handful of episodes that you have produced as of the recording of this, I can already see changes even in the content that you have created and in your level of enthusiasm that you get there. And it's just a matter of time, not that you're waiting on a countdown timer for I have to find a client in X amount of episodes. It's not like that. It's more like, hey, I want to share my message with as many people as possible. I know there's somebody out there that can benefit from it, and I know that too. So that is just a matter of time as well.
And I thank you for that. And you've been a great guest. Of course, we could stay on this. Doug is a permanent guest every 6 months.
every week.
every week.
I'll be back next week as Philip's co-host.
Same time, same bat channel, same bat time. So I want to thank you again for taking the time to be on the show. And to my conscious community, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.